and welcome to PCB Chat. I'm Mike Buto, editor of Printed Circuit Design and Fabrication and Circuits Assembly Magazines. Our sponsor today is PCB West, the leading trade show for electronics design, fabrication, and assembly, coming this September to the Santa Clara, California Convention Center. Learn more at PCBWest.com. Before we get to today's guest, I have a bit of housekeeping. I'm pleased to share that PCB Chat is now available on Spotify. So, in addition to finding us at our website, PCBChat.com, listeners can also download our podcasts at iTunes, Google Play, and now Spotify. Brenda Bainey has been addressing product environmental regulations for over 20 years. She began with General Motors as a materials engineer, where she was at the forefront of the automotive industry's materials compliance reporting. Brenda has led internal company projects on elimination of CFCs, lead solder, hexavalent chromium, and a myriad of other substances of concern. She has been a leader within both automotive and electronics industry groups covering topics like ionic cleanliness of printed circuit boards, lead-free solder, end-of-life vehicles, RoHS and REACH compliance, and is considered a supply chain expert for material content reporting. Brenda was the product stewardship manager for Delphi, where she led the reporting of complex material compliance data on hundreds of thousands of parts successfully. She also created an internal conflict minerals cross-functional team, leading Delphi to be named as the number one automotive component supplier in the 2015 ASCENT conflict minerals rating. In March 2016, Brenda founded B-Cubed Consulting, where she works with automotive and other durable goods suppliers to keep strategies on course and stay up to date on the latest negotiations between industry and global government enforcement bodies. Welcome to PCB Chat, Brenda.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for inviting me.
Next month, California will usher in the latest amendment to Prop 65, requiring any consumer product sold in California, with a few notable exceptions, to have clear and reasonable warnings if they contain any of the more than 900 chemicals the California Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment has determined to cause cancer, birth defects, or other reproductive harm. What is the expected impact of the latest amendment on the electronics industry?
Mike, as you know, California Prop 65 is a product safety law, and as such is trickier for companies to manage than a pure substance ban. We have a definitive date, and that tends to push the whole supply chain to just substitute chemicals and materials. First, the whole clear and reasonable warnings apply to consumers in a variety of settings, in the products they purchase, in their homes, or if they're exposed at work, if there's any potential to be released in the environment. So a manufacturer has to consider not only the product as it's put on the shelf in a retail environment, but also the professional users in the workplace where previously only maybe an MSDS was going with the product. There might also be sales channels to distributors outside of the U.S., which might be repackaging your product, potentially removing your label, and then selling that product back into California without your knowledge. That doesn't always remove your company's liability if a bounty hunter lawyer discovers your name on a product on a shelf without a label. The deeper your pockets, the more likely you are to end up with a lawsuit. An example might be like a replacement gear shift for a tractor from 2010, where your Asia-Pacific distributor handles all your legacy spare parts and also offers internet sales. Could be nickel or chromate, something for corrosion resistance, but those chemicals may now require a specific label. The latest amendment coming in at the end of the month clarifies the responsibilities to provide these warnings on the package or to the retailer distributor via their labels, shelf signs, tags, and new internet warning language. If you don't want to provide all that to your distributors, you had to have communicated with them about 6 months ahead of time through your terms and conditions or something that's very specific in your purchasing language. Second, a big challenge is that list itself. As you noted, there's over 900 chemicals. These are found in everyday items, and many of these are used as plasticizers, flame retardants, precursors, and they're not currently regulated by TSCA, REACH, or other laws. That means they're not typically being tracked through the supply chain. To be adequately prepared, companies should have already assessed their product entry points into California. Are they selling to retailers, through distributors? Could they be coming in from outside? What about internet sales?
So then, in your experience, do companies that are selling and then complying with the California regulations tend to use that same level of detail and reporting in other states, or does California tend to stand alone?
California tends to be a standalone. Other states have had things, but they were very product-specific. For example, the Washington State brake pads or mercury going into Maine. This one is patterned off of REACH, and it has wide impact.
Now, if a company were to be using IPC 1752A, which is a materials declaration management standard, would they be in good shape for reporting?
Material content standards, such as IPC 1752A, will be very helpful in determining what, if any, of the list of substances are on your product. As we talked about before, there are a few extra things, but even if the particular substance isn't listed on your supplier data, if you're getting full material disclosure beyond just a yes-no compliance statement, you may be able to extrapolate your risk areas, such as polymers, rubbers, and have a targeted follow-up to determine what to include on the label. A lot of California is plasticizers that are found in PVCs or plastisol. For electronics, I think this is going to drive many of their customers within the chain to require more detailed reporting. Most electronics are not used in a vacuum, integrated into other industries. From Fitbits to cars, toys to tractors, commercial ovens to airplanes, almost everything contains a sensor or some sort of electronic. While many companies have their own forms, the electronics industry has centered their material declarations on this schema or a B2B format. It has multiple ways to do that, so you have to ask, is your company's data in good shape? It depends on two things. Is it detailed enough to indicate specific substances or materials? And is it new enough to be relevant? Since all reporting is done at a point of time, the yes-no answers become suspect to being out of date as soon as they're sent or posted because new substances are always being added to these lists.
So what you're getting at is that this can be very far-reaching, and that's probably a good lead into my next question, which has to do with RoHS. So RoHS continues to be updated as the EU has now added 4 additional substances in the RoHS 3 directive. What can listeners expect there?
Okay. In 2015, RoHS 3 was announced, which expanded the list of prohibited substances from 6 to 10 by adding 4 new types of phthalates. These 4 new members are used as plasticizers and are thankfully already banned or restricted in many parts of the world. DEHP accounts for more than half of the plasticizer industry, for example, making up 60% in the Asia-Pacific market. It's also very heavily used in PVC, which for this reason and others is becoming an unwise choice for plastics in the design of electronics, specifically wiring. DBP can also be used in an inks and adhesives, so it may be found in hidden places. And DIBP is used in making acrylic or plexiglass.
For the listeners who aren't necessarily chemical engineers, what is a phthalate?
A phthalate is a long chain polymer that can attach to other types of polymers, making it softer. So you know for wire, the softer it is, the easier it is to bend it around and get places. However, if you need something to have higher temperature resistant, it usually has less phthalate and more other additives. Listeners should expect to expand their current efforts and dig a little deeper into the plastics and perhaps areas they've not ever considered, especially if they've mostly only been focused on the electronics parts of the house, platings, epoxies. Plasticizers are very widely used, and materials you wouldn't think of, such as rubber and ink, may be impacted. You should get a year ahead of this just to see where you might have impact.
Brenda, in your experience, is every link in the supply chain taking on some responsibility for keeping track of the materials used in their product? Or is that tending to be concentrated at the OEM level or with certain distributors?
Interestingly enough, the power in the supply chain is concentrated at both the top and the bottom. It is almost like the conflict minerals smelter, where your OEMs, such as Caterpillar, Ford, and Boeing, have lists that they try to shove down the supply chain, and they're very powerful, so their tier ones will give them what they want. In the middle, you've got these sub-assemblies, the component suppliers, the electronic suppliers, and everybody is using the big raw material suppliers. So the other end of the chain, the ExxonMobils and the Dow Chemicals, have a lot more impact in clout, if you will. They are aware of all the lists and everything that's regulated across all of the industry, but they're not planning to get rid of something until it is legislated. So the people in the middle are trying to rest with, you know, 2 or 3 different customer industry lists while still getting the chemical industry to give them the data they want, maybe even ahead of when the legislation is coming into play.
Now, earlier you touched on one of the regulations I'd like to talk about, specifically REACH. I'd also like to get to the ELV directive. I've been reading that the European Chemical Industry Council has reversed its longtime view of REACH and is now supporting a worldwide system of safety data on individual substances, but the U.S. is resisting in favor of our own Toxic Substances Control Act. What can you tell us about that?
ECHA launched a publicly available database with information on over 15,000 substances, which was aimed at use by regulators, businesses, and researchers. This was all tied to the registration of chemicals by the businesses that were either manufacturing or importing these. And it's a main linchpin into their producer responsibility, circular economy type of legislation. There's still the ability to state certain information is confidential, and that's present in about 2% of all the dossiers that were submitted to ECHA. The U.S. is still working on how it wants to modify TSCA. It was released in 1976 and it has never been edited. A 2016 amendment, the Frank-Lautenberg Chemical Safety for the 21st Century Act, included much-needed improvements, such as some mandatory requirements for the EPA to evaluate existing chemicals instead of grandfathering everything, risk-based chemical assessments, some increased public transparency, and having a source of funding. 1 year later, in 2017, the EPA announced that they had done a number of implementation activities that enabled them to meet their first-year responsibility. This included three new rules: providing a guidance document, releasing some scoping documents for the first 10 risk evaluations that will be conducted. And they finalized a rule to establish an EPA process and criteria for identifying these high-priority chemicals. Industry reporting of chemicals manufactured and processed in the U.S. over the past 10 years. This will help identify which substances on the TSCA inventory are still active in U.S. commerce, and it'll help inform the chemicals EPA what they need to prioritize. The EU approach was recently vetted in a 10-year review process, and the EUCOM and ECHA, while noting some areas for improvement, especially with regard to these product-related ones, said it was basically positive. They feel that REACH should continue, and with the global cloning of this approach in many other countries, it is likely to remain the pattern and default for many countries establishing product compliance legislation.
Now, I'm not sure if this is outside the scope of your experience, but have you noticed any effect of all these regulations on the rate of product development at OEM?
Somewhat, as the resources are squeezed because more chemicals are coming on and manufacturing is tending to move more overseas, it's getting trickier and trickier to just report yes-no compliance to these myriad of legislation. You're also starting to get emerging countries such as China putting out their own laws, and they're not trusting the reporting scheme. They're asking for testing, and in many cases, testing that has to be done in that local area.
Finally, there's the ELV, also known as the End-of-Life Vehicles Directive. Are there new developments on that front?
Since the ELV is restricted to automotive, it's going through its normal cadence of exemption reviews. But those do overlap with the electronics. Believe it or not, automotive is in their ninth review stage, while the eighth one was about lead and heavy metals or metal alloys, such as copper and aluminum. The ninth review is coming back in with ROHS folks, also going through some EU channel. There's an exemption that overlaps about using lead and glass matrix, which is used as thick film inks, encapsulation, and protection. Also, connector pin technology has an exemption for automotive, while it doesn't for ROHS. But in automotive and some heavy industries, you've still got the need for harsh environment, vibration-laden type of situation. So you're still allowed to use lead, you just have to tell the story.
So we've talked about Prop 65 in California, RoHS, REACH, ELV, and you touched on the China RoHS. Obviously, there's a litany of environmental regulations that are pertinent to the electronics industry out there, but the time would prevent us from going through. Is there anything else listeners should be paying attention to that we haven't covered today?
This covers most of it. I would suggest that people look at how old their data is and how deep it is. If you've never expanded to get real material data, you ought to consider that.
I understand that there are some upcoming meetings that some of our listeners might be interested in.
Yes, and I'd like to invite automotive and automotive-related suppliers to an upcoming industry forum on chemical legislation and the automotive IMDS system. It's held in Detroit on September 26th and 27th, and you can get more details at www.aiag.org.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. That wraps another segment of PCB Chat. I want to thank our guest, Brenda Bainey. folks who want to get in touch with Brenda can visit her website at bcubedconsulting.com. That's B-C-U-B-E-D consulting.com. I'd like to thank our sponsor again, PCB West, the leading trade show for electronics design, fabrication, and assembly, coming September to Santa Clara. Learn more at pcbwest.com.
This has been PCB Chat with Mike Buto.